Okay, so I come in and I say, I draw my sword. That's not a... There's no rule associated with that.
No, that's role-playing. Yeah. Right?
Okay.
Because it's kind of interesting when you think, like, from a game balance perspective, it doesn't really matter if you have your sword out or your sword's in your hand. Like, it's just, you're going to attack with your sword. When we do, like, the map on the game, we don't account for that.
Yeah, so So does that mean that I can draw and sheathe my sword an unlimited number of times per round?
That's up to the DM. So, yeah.
You're just in the corner.
Well, because that's...
Oh, and you're going to go blind. All right?
All right. I just, I know that question's coming up. I get it.
No, but that's one of the things. Right? And this is where, RPG design is so interesting, right? Because you get these things where if you try to make a rule, of something, someone's going to figure out a way where it doesn't make sense. And if you don't make a rule, then, at least you can say, look, it's up to the DM's common sense, right? It's kind of leaning a little bit more on the DM to say you're kind of...
Imagine a situation like this. So imagine that, like pull starting a lawnmower or something like that. Like, you pull it. It's just, that would be, in this, it would be a no, it would not be an action. But imagine if I had some kind of a device that generated a small amount of magical charge per minor interaction. So now I can do that an unlimited number of times on this magical device. Each time I stroke it, each individual stroke doesn't count in the system. I can unleash untold magical power each turn because charging and arming the device is not accounted for in the rules.
DM should never have given you that device. But no, this is a better example. You have an archer, and the archer's like, oh, I just shot that fucking goblin. Bam, he's dead. I'm going to shoot another goblin. And as a DM, I'm like, whoa, you need to notch an arrow, buddy. Where'd you get that arrow from?
Where that?
You know, you need to take some time to notch that. Like, right? With that, I could, as a DM, I could be like, your action isn't to shoot another arrow. Your action is to draw and notch another arrow.
Well, it depends. Yeah, it depends on how you're looking at it as the DM, right? So, like, if the player's action was just to shoot a goblin, that's his action he's done. You assume everything else that goes along with it is just, he just does that as part of trying to shoot the goblin.
Because he's rad at shooting arrows.
Yeah, exactly.
It's his job.
Yeah, and unless he had a special ability that said, I can shoot twice, he's used his action.
Okay.
Now, as a DM, kind of back to the lawnmower example, like, so, yeah, most of the time, if you want to, like, I want to go use the lawnmower as my action, right, you start it up and start pushing it, right? But the DM might, if the DM decides, or there's something hard in adventure, says, oh, no, you go to pull it and nothing happens, and now it becomes more dramatically appropriate, so he says, no, now I have to figure out how to fix the lawnmower, right? Or it's like, you know, a classic car movie thing, you get behind the wheels of a car, and you go to start it. Most of the time, you don't even consider it, right? If you're watching, like, Sleepless in Seattle, and the guy gets in his car, he just drives away, right?
Yeah.
But if he's getting chased by Jason Voorhees, and the car doesn't work, now his action is, shit, I gotta get in my car, right? Or I gotta go run off or try to fix the car. So a lot of it's kind of giving that dramatic tool to the DM to say, like, maybe the archer goes to grab an arrow out, and that's really going to, whatever, there's something weird's going on.
So the idea of an action is much more ambiguous now.
That's right. It's much broader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it incorporates what we would consider, like, the preparatory
exactly
aspects of it.
Yeah. It kind of gobbles up some of the things before and
action
after.
And move. And it can be in any order?
Yeah, exactly. And you can break up your move with your action. So if you say if your speed was 30 feet, you can move 15 feet, fire an arrow, and then move 15 more feet. So you could sort of dodge around corners, like that.
Okay.
So it's just you have a little more flexibility. Now, in most cases, as a player, like, if you want to cast a spell, that's an action, and the spell just tells you what happens, right?
So those aspects are baked into the abilities themselves.
Yeah, exactly. So if you have a special ability or something, it'll just say, as an action, do X, Y, and Z.
Okay. There we go. Okay. So you've essentially, on a power-by-power basis, you can alter the economic valuation of the ability.
Exactly. And that goes kind of back to the cleric. So instead of saying, hey, everyone has a minor action and clerics use it to heal.
That's right.
What happens is, like, the fighter doesn't really use his minor unless it's, like, drawing a sword or something like that. But you could argue...
Oh, I see.
You know, if the fighter wants to attack with a sword and then drop his sword and pull out a mace or something like that, or, if you know, fire an arrow then pull out a sword when the orc gets close, like, sure, that's fine. We don't need the minor action hanging over everyone's head.
To describe that. But what they might have done is used a minor action instead to mark targets and things like that. So we'll get to that when we get over to Vinwin.
Yeah.
But you're saying on mine, healing word is an ability that in the new paradigm would allow me to use an action to hit and cast a spell as a part of that. And that would that be in this paradigm, would that be considered a daily?
Yeah, so the version I read to you now is a spell. So you prepare it. So basically, it's a daily power.
Oh, I see.
And then within your channel divinity, you can use that a number of times a day based on your level. So when you start at lower level, I think you can use it once per day, and then it goes up. Now, the important thing about healing, too, so you can use it once per day at first level.
Right.
One of the key things for healing, too, is the second wind is no longer for use during combat.
Ha!
But when you take a short rest, you have hit dice. Basically, it's a pool of dice you can roll.
Per level?
Yeah, exactly. To heal your character. So what will happen, what I've noticed in playtesting is, like, so I'm playing a fighter right now. If I get beaten up by whatever, I charged a bunch of skeletons, I was down to 5 hit points, but the cleric doesn't need to wear what healing me during the fight. If we know I'm safe during the fight, I can just hang back or just use a bow. And then when we rest, I can spend my hit dice to heal up without having to use a spell.
So it can happen in a fight.
Yeah.
But player characters still have a reservoir of hit points that they can boost back up. But those dice are based on, is it per class?
It's based on class. You get one per level, and then you add your con bonus to it when you're
playing. I see. So warriors are still rolling D10s or 12s to a wizard's lower dice.
Exactly, yeah. So the idea is really for cleric healing is really for use in combat. It's kind of rare that you use a healing spell lots of times.
Well, again, so you used the word iconic before, and I suspect that wasn't on accident. I mean, there's a distillation process here that has to do with what a class is capable of, like in terms of play style. You're trying to get those differentiations back because that went away, especially as you climb in levels. Those differentiations were obliterated.
Looking at a level 20 rogue, you know, he was a wizard. Yeah. he was a wizard with knives.
Yeah, no, that is a big part of the game, is making the classes feel really vivid. So right now,
because you can't help. I mean, this is one of the things, right? I mean, obviously, by the time you're at 20th level, that there's something else holding that party together than mechanics. If you've played to 20th level, you're not just playing it for the system anymore.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And that's a good thing, because the wheels start to wobble. It's like that 60 mile an hour out on the highway. Like, you can feel some tension in the axle, right? And I think that to a certain extent, you want to be, well, you know, I can't say, this isn't a generality. I'd say this is what I want to do when I come to the table. And it's obvious. Like, I knew that this party, like when we first started making characters, I knew that this party needed a cleric. I made a cleric there was no hesitation. Like, what I want to do is I want to be useful to the party.
Yep.
But I think, as a general thing, people want to be useful to the party in their own way. And I think that is something that got stolen to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you do something, you want people to go, oh, geez, thank God we brought the rogue.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And that has been a huge part of class design, is building those things into the classes, where each class can do something that no other class can do, and they do it in a way that, like what you just said, is exactly what we want, where the other players at the table, I wish that ability is cool, or I wish I had that.
Right. Yeah. Or I don't have it, but I'm glad that we have it at the table.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think that's where, like, when you say, like, the spell design we just talked about, is about rolling the core system back. It's a little bit simpler. It's a little more streamlined. So the classes could be a little meatier.
Exactly. So you cull some of that uniformity as it goes up.
Yeah, because I think that's one of the things that people like about role-playing games, is the feeling that their character is really unique.
The role. Class. I mean, it keeps coming back to the first word, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you know, in next, you're going to be the bash people and heal. And that's one of the things we added, too, was so clerics get minor spells. Those basically your at-will abilities.
Okay, but not to be confused with the minor action.
Exactly.
You're saying I have minor spells that can be used in the same way that we think of as at-will abilities.
Exactly.
Give me an example of it.
Sure.
Of what we would call a minor spell. So this is something I can bring to the table in every fight if I need to.
So here, let me grab one of my files here, and I think it should be in the spell. I know there is one, for instance, we have the Sun Domain, and the Sun Cleric can blast people with radiant.
Okay, copy. So the Laser Cleric stuff.
Yes, exactly. You can still play a Laser Cleric. And this is kind of ties it to the domains. So if you take the Sun Domain, you get an at-will that lets you just, you know, blast every round. If you're a war domain, that's more of a melee guy.
Yeah.
You're at will. It's not really. It's more utility than combat focus, because the idea is if you're a warrior cleric, you've got a two.
Well, you're yeah. You're not in the front. I mean, you're there to support.
Yeah, exactly. So it just depends on what kind of cleric you want to play. The domain plays a much bigger role in determining what your character looks like. You can almost think of domain as being the equivalent of build in fourth.
Yeah.
So the.
So give me an example, like of this war domain cleric. Like, what am I kicking out to help my people?
So as a war cleric, so one of the things with the core cleric class is the cleric doesn't start with any armor or weapons. It's by your domain. So the war cleric is wearing...
So they're all different.
Yeah, exactly. Huh. So if you're war cleric, you're wearing heavy armor, which gives you really good AC. You're wielding martial weapons, like basically you're, like, you're
absolutely.
A fighter.
Yeah, well, yeah, this is a trained, like a warrior.
Yeah, exactly. But instead of getting the fighter's expertise dice, and we'll get to those when we talk about the fighter, you're getting your spells to compensate. But compared to other clerics, you're going to have a much higher AC, and you're going to have a much better attacks in melee. So the, let's see, I'm actually reading the file right now.
Yeah.
The other thing you get too is, so the way cleric spells work, you have your spell slots you can expend to cast your spells.
So back, just, so that's from way back, right?
Exactly, yeah. That's from like third, it's a little bit like the third edition sorcerer. So
there
you have your spell slots, then you have your spell list. So as a war cleric, you get spells like Crusader Strike or Battle Psalm. You always have those prepared. So you don't have to go through the spell list and specifically prepare those spells.
But I do have spells that I can specifically prepare.
Exactly, yep. And those are your other things like Cure Light Wounds or not Grease. That's a wizard spell.
Yeah.
The which I can kind of scroll it up. We don't have two. We have like about 10 spells, but things like Bless.
The classics. So, but those would be prepared. Those would not be considered at wills.
Exactly. Yep. So the idea is that in play you feel really different.
Even if you could make a party of clerics and they would.
Yeah, that's one of the things we wanted to do. Is, so if you're playing a cleric of shadows, you feel a little more like a thief. I mean, you're not a rogue, but you feel a bit more like one. Kind of like with a battle cleric, you're wearing heavy armor. And
yeah, I mean, those almost sound more like templates to me.
In some ways, they are. They're kind of like the second edition. If you played second edition with the spheres system it had, when you built a cleric, you just had these giant lists of spells and you custom built every cleric. It's a lot more like that. I mean, it's custom because we'll build the domains for you. And our goal is for DMs and the Dungeon Master's Guide.
So these at-wills, generally speaking, are not going to be like the at-wills that we know that are basically sort of elaborate attacks that I'm pulling off every round.
So the key is when you use the word elaborate, because what we want to make sure is that the at-wills are fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
So, because we don't want to give you a lot, so it's easier to manage. You only have, like, a couple of them.
Yeah.
And they're usually, we want them to be very distinct, so it's pretty straightforward. You're not spending a lot of time looking at them and trying to figure out which one you want to use. You just think, oh, hey, I need to blast this guy. For as much damage as possible, I use this one.
Yeah.
I need to help my friend, I use this one. So it's very distinct choices. So rather than having, say, two different attacks, it may be one's against fort, one's against reflex. Not really sure. You kind of have to, a couple rounds in, you figure out which one you should
attacks
use.
Versus fort and reflex, I assume those are gone.
Yeah, it's all just it's either a saving throw or an attack against AC.
Okay.
And again, that's to speed things up. So
yep,
if you're making an attack, it's just AC.
Yeah. So does it on the table, does it actually speed things up? Because it seemed to me like the attack versus fort was designed itself to speed things up in some ways. I guess only in cases of a save.
Yeah, so one of the things we did, we make sure the saving throws exist only on daily powers and at-will powers. At least right now, this is where I'd like to end up with. At-will powers are always attacks in armor class. So you're only wearing with saving throws when you're kind of kicking in a more powerful ability.
And that's there we go.
We don't mind if it takes a bit longer. I think people like it. If you throw a fireball, that it does take longer, because that's kind of a cool
And it
moment.
Feels different.
Exactly, right.
On the table.
Exactly.
Like now the saving throw's coming out, this is some real stuff.
Yep. Precisely. And so that's something where, and that's something you might see too, like in the, for the Warlock's encounter powers, where, okay, if you boost it to an encounter power level, now it's requiring a saving throw, things like that. An attack that might be like a firebolt, when you boost it, it's now a fire blast explodes, so everyone has to make a reflex save.
So is most of it going to, in terms of complexity, going to these domains? Or is there a deity aspect? Maybe that'll come in specific setting supplements,
exactly.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. So you can imagine the player's handbook that'll just be domains, and then for a world book, if you
they might say what book. Domains a specific goddess is available for.
I think what we do actually for the world books that we do, we'll actually have domains for the gods. So it's not just like the sun domain if you're in Forgotten Realms. You'd be like, okay, here, because then what we can do is we can go back to like the world lore and like that stuff and be very specific about.
I don't know if you guys want to use this, but I just created a design for Orcus, the evil whale wizard. He shoots acid out of his blowhole. Which I think is really dangerous.
Okay, yeah, especially.
And he has a skull.
So a ranged attack.
He has a skull on him, so.
Something to consider.
It's something to put in there.
You know what,
you
bring that
want.
Back with you.
Okay,
I would workshop that, but.
I think it could be big.
I would put copyright Gabriel.
Oh, yeah.
You want to make sure you grab that before we steal it.
Copyright.
There you go.
Mike Krahulik. I got to put the legal name on there.
Yeah.
So that they can't take it. Okay. 2000.
Well.
12.
I am intrigued by some of those distinctions.
And trademark on acid.
DM. That's gonna. Those are gonna be
trademark copyright.
Those were interesting choices to me, especially like we had to segue into healing because that's more or less my job. But that sounds pretty dangerous. Like especially compared to the way things are now, like it seems like combats are designed to be a little bit more.
Yeah.
To the wire.
Yeah, there's going to be a little. Well, it's kind of like what we want to do is if you get into a fight, there's an after effect the rest of the adventure until you can camp for the night, and then it's a little more deadlier. I mean, one of the things is like we were talking about earlier, if we err on making the combat deadlier, I think that actually will help us get the end of the day, the game
that you're looking for.
Exactly. More balanced strategy. Because, you know, players are always going to be clever. They're going to come up with ways to get combos and stuff.
Absolutely.
So we want to aim so it's a little bit deadlier. And then the DM can just decide, like, one of the things we want to be able to say is in the DMG, like, if you keep kicking your players' asses and you don't mean to, here's some of the changes you can make to the system. Make it a lot more flexible. Give DMs a lot more tools to mess around with things.
I like the idea of it being more dangerous.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
Like
I'm
the
totally
idea
ready
there
for
being
that.
Actual consequences.
Yeah, well, here, let's talk about consequences for Binwin Bronze Bottom. I want to know what these consequences are. You're talking about expertise dice, or is that,
yes.
Are we getting ahead of it there?
No, this is actually the new big thing for fighters.
So this is another one of these iconic things where you're trying to say, hey, this is something that these dudes get. And when you say fighters, I mean, can I derive from that you still have a sort of, like, in the same way that you had power sources in 4, are there going to be different types of fighters, the warrior being one of them?
Yeah, I mean,
like
paladins and rangers? Or
no,
like that, or?
Not so much like that. Like, in the same way that you had, like, a leader role, mm-hmm. and their role was to heal, but you had different power sources that allowed you to make different types of things. Because for me, one of the coolest ideas in 4... And I'll be sad to see it go, but I guess I have to see how you would try to implement it if you wanted to come back. I loved the warlord.
Yeah.
I loved the idea that there was a martial leader who could do a healing, essentially heal, you know, in game terms, but it was actually a sort of a morale thing.
Exactly.
I loved the idea that there was another type of leader that was not, it wasn't about prayer, it was pure valor.
Yeah, so when we talk about the warlock versus the wizard, I'd like to have... We haven't gotten to the warlord yet, or even any of the other healers, like the druid.
But do you consider, in this new thing, I mean, do you consider the warlord... do you consider the warlord a core class?
I would like to make it a class. Now, one of the questions we have is, like, if you think of yourself as being a leader, is it better to be, like, I'm a wizard and a leader, or am I a cleric and a war leader?
I see.
But I think that one of the things, like, because at one point, the warlock looked like it was just going to end up being a specialty. Specialties are just kind of what we call themes.
Mm-hmm.
Specialties are what we used to call themes, and themes are basically represent feats you take. But one of the things we did was we kind of pushed
warlock.
Oh,
you
did
away with themes?
Well, themes are still themes. We're just calling them something different.
Easier
for people to figure out, like, what they actually mean.
Because themes meant something in previous systems.
Themes were probably the thing I thought was the coolest.
Yeah, and that's in 4 themes mean something very very specific. In next, it's a similar thing. A theme really in 4th is more like the union of your background and your specialty. That's probably a better way to think about it. Instead of just calling it theme, because there were just parts of the theme from 4th that weren't in the theme.
I mean, can we drill down and, like, see what Omen...
Yeah, do you want to do that?
Yeah.
So one of the things, so theme, specialty, you know, specialty and background, they basically describe what your character is beyond your class. So to give you an example, you might have a background of soldier or bounty hunter or, renegade wizard or something like that.
Exactly.
So basically it's like what you did before you're an adventurer. You might still be doing that because it might be a profession. You still do, like, if you're a bounty hunter.
So it's entrepreneur. Theme that you guys
we could build the entrepreneur theme, because one of the things we do is, so with themes, basically we just give you examples, and they're like,
yeah, because they're pretty general, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, we then give you rules for building your own. So that goes for specialties and background.
So you feel like that's something people can cook in,
because
it's a handful of skills and like a minor bonus, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a cool. It's basically right at the crossroads of sort of flavor and function, right?
Yep.
It sort of helps push the character away from the dock,
yep.
Right?
So as an example, the noble theme gives you 3 lackeys who just follow you.
Ha!
They're just servants. They only they can't really fight, but they can do stuff like carry your equipment around in the dungeon.
Exactly.
Now, the trouble is, if, like, you send them into traps and then get killed, it's kind of hard to hire new ones. So you kind of have to, like, you don't want to just get them all killed.
You've never played an edition of D&D where hiring NPCs is super important, have you?
No, that wasn't really a thing in 4th.
No, because first level characters in 4th are already ready to go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So hook me up. I mean, what are we talking about here? I mean, you are familiar with Omen Drawn. Like, essentially, he runs a business. It's an adventuring business. But he was essentially an urban priest that started a business. It's all in line with his deity and everything.
Yeah,
but
Vendry,
exactly. So, but he's essentially... a business owner who is also a devout.
So I think entrepreneur is a pretty good place to start. Because right now we have, like, the skill list and stuff. We don't have, like, a bajillion backgrounds. We have, like, tradesmen, but I think it's going to be a little more fun to kind of walk through and think about what your character does. And then, oh, it's a PDF. It's a PDF. So, sorry, just 1 second. I need to shrink this file down.
So backgrounds are the new themes.
Exactly. So, like, we have, like, artisan and stuff. That doesn't really fit
no,
what you're talking about.
I don't think so.
Bounty Hunter. Let's see if I got, like, businessman here. Noble, knight. And so the great thing is if we don't have these, then we can just pick out the skills and everything that fits in well. So is
the background one of the main ways you get skills?
Yeah, it is actually, it is the way you get skills unless you're a rogue. If you're a rogue, you get more skills. But so basically what we've done is we've taken the skills out of the character class, so everyone gets the same number of skills, and you can pick whatever skills you want. So you get to kind of sculpt.
But you get them from
your background.
These packages here.
Exactly.
So in total, is that actually less skills per character? Like, is it sort of thing where you need to be able to rely on other people more?
It's so the way
what
skills,
do you mean?
So the way skills shake out is they're more specializations. So the game is really driven by ability checks. So when we figure out the DC tables and all that stuff, we assume you're not trained in the skill at all. And so most of the time you just be rolling your strength, your intelligence, or whatever ability score the DM picks. Skills right now give you, I think it's a +3 bonus. So basically it gives you a leg up on other people.
I see. But the stat check is the core.
Exactly. And that number, the +3 bonus goes up fairly slowly, like a lot of the math in the system. So you have an 18 strength, you're really good at doing strength stuff. If someone has a skill that's, like, say, climbing, they're pretty good at climbing, but they might actually, with your 18 strength, you're still a really good climber all the way up to the end of the game. So the skill guy will probably surpass you probably pretty early on, but the difference, the gap, isn't as huge as it might otherwise
be. Than the natural ability to do that kind of stuff.
You can almost think, like, in fourth, imagine if you weren't getting plus half your level to your checks. So it's just if you're trained, you're +5, everyone else is just getting their ability score. And so, yeah, the skill, and we just use the same DCs whether you're trained or not. So the trained guy can hit higher numbers, can hit higher DCs, but, like, if the typical DC is, like, 10, trained guy's hitting that most of the time, but even the average guy's hitting it half the time. So the idea is it's a little bit more, the numbers are a little more compact in training. We're just saying if you're trained, you're better at this.
So the entrepreneur background for Omen would decide what abilities he's trained at?
Exactly.
Or what skills.
Yeah. And so you can always just choose 3 skills in the list. So you don't, if you decide, you can basically make your own background.
Oh, cool.
So we've got a skill called Commerce. I'm actually got a guy
well, that makes
right
sense,
here.
Yeah.
That's going to fit. What is this?
I see. So you have some new skills, or maybe they're old skills.
Yeah, they're a little bit... It's actually... This skill list is kind of in flux because we started off with skills that were very broad and they were just kind of overshadowing the abilities. So now we're getting a little more specific.
Yeah.
And we'll probably like fluctuate 2 or 3 times back and forth and then pick one of those 2.
Right.
But right now it's still up in the air. But there's a commerce skill and that basically applies whenever you're haggling or negotiating or trying to make a deal. So that sounds like it'd be a good match for Notch.
That would be marvelous, yeah.
And then there is a trait. You could have a trade, which means you're good at making stuff, but that probably doesn't quite fit what you're looking for. Do you have, like, an office and, like, a staff?
Yeah, I have a staff office. And
so
an office.
We could take the noble's trait and modify that a little bit. Where is the noble? Let me guess. Like, this file is probably going to miss the noble. Here we go. So you can have retainers. So basically with your retainers...
Oh, the interns.
Exactly, right? So that'll be your trait, which basically means you have a staff of 3. And it's what I was describing with the noble.
Yeah, exactly.
You have these 3 guys fall, you get them killed, it's kind of hard to replace them, but you can eventually replace
them.
Yeah. So that can be your trait, so that represents your staff. And this is something we want people to do is... You know,
think about what they actually do.
Exactly, right? And then just kind of go through in the list and find things that fit best. Now, sometimes, like, retainers, the way the flavor text is written, it's kind of aimed at being a nobleman, but that's not as important as what the actual effect
is. As what they do.
Exactly.
Right.
So we've got one of your skills picked out. We've got your trait picked out. And let's see, what other skills do we have here? What else would you say? And these are, it's a little messy. It's just because they're divided up. I don't think I have just a list of the skills. But what else would you think, like, when Orin's...
Omen.
Sorry.
Omen Drawn.
I keep forgetting
that. No one knows his name. It's not your fault.
It's not important.
So when you're not adventuring, what's he doing? What are the important
things? Yeah, I mean, bluff. It seems to me like all these things, so commerce, things like bluff.
Diplomacy, yeah. Right? You're making business deals.
Yeah. That's why I was thinking about bluff. Like, basically those things that smooth the edges of a deal.
Okay, no, and actually I feel like I'm an idiot here. Like, what skills are you trained in right now? That's probably the easiest place to start.
Well, the ones I have in here are diplomacy, heal, insight, and religion.
Okay, so we could actually go, Commerce covers more deal making.
Yeah.
Bluff, diplomacy, insight. So why don't we go here? And you had insight. And you also had religion trained, right?
Yeah.
So religion, I think the cleric just gives you that for free.
I suspect.
So we can just strike that one. And so insight is, let me just check commerce, because commerce might incorporate some parts of insight. It's really more just for determining and haggling. These aren't all the skills, by the way.
Yeah.
So if you had commerce, bluff, diplomacy, and insight, diplomacy gets kind of included in commerce, so we could probably just give you commerce, bluff, and insight.
Yeah, I mean, as long as I could, you know, successfully steer the conversation toward mutual benefit or something like that, right?
Exactly. That's really like diplomacy kind of focuses on, as opposed to bluff.
Absolutely.
So yeah. So the
yeah. I want to play. I'm ready to go.
So we have commerce, bluff, and insight. Now in the final draft, though, those names will probably be a little bit different because
sure.
I think the commerce might involve more to be the negotiation or even just be called diplomacy and just be more.
Those things, exactly. Those types of arrangements may end up being, you know, solidified or something like that. But then on top of that, you have these lackeys who can basically handle basic administrative tasks while we're away.
Exactly. And you could bring them on the adventures if you want to carry your gear, if you're whatever. But yeah. Then again, you're kind of risking them. But yeah, so that is your background. So then the next stage would be then looking at your specialty. So compared to other clerics, what is your character's, like, you can start thinking of your build, you can think of signature abilities you like to use, tactics.
Big words.
Let's see.
Poetry.
Like, an easy place to start, are you a laser cleric or more a bash cleric?
Again, like, he was in 4, he was designed to have a strong mix.
Okay.
Like, in 4, because our party size, I mean, because when we started the game, our party size was, you know, we just had the 3 of us. So I felt like it was important to be broad, broad as possible. So if I need to hold back and dispense these heals, I'm ready to do that. And then if I need to be alongside Binwin, then I can do that as well. So in terms of, like, what sort of solidifies his deal, I mean, I think the main thing that...
He tends to be I guess what I would have thought of in 4th edition is a controller.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, he tells...
Other people.
He tells Jim and Binwin what to do.
What they tend to do is look to me for the nod.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So we have the leader specialty.
Interesting.
It sadly only has 1 feat right now because it's a giant level 3 feat to be determined node here.
So hold on a second. So I think this is a new category of something that I did not know about. So these specialties, this is not the lackeys or anything like. This is something else that's a part of a background that is essentially like a leveling capability?
Yeah, it's separate from your background. So the way you can think of it is your theme in 4E, your theme in Next consists of your background, your skills, and that trait we gave you.
Yeah.
And then your specialty, basically that speaks to all your feats. So you can think
of a
specialty as a bundle of feats. That
weird. Okay.
So, yeah, as a leader, you have presence, personality, needed to command attention in a room. It's all about... I just scrolled away. Where is it? Oh, it's Slayer. So, yeah, so we've got leader here. You could be a commander, politician, a noble. The key is the authority you possess. When you talk, people listen.
I think that's pretty good for Omen.
Yeah, that would work.
So we've got 1 feat here so far. This other feat's coming.
To be determined.
But the first one off the top would be Battle Commander. This would be your feat at first level. And it lets you, basically as an action, you can grant your allies advantage on attacks. And you can also give them an extra move. So you could basically
listen, hold on. That's straight up warlord stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I can build that into a traditional cleric.
Yep. That's one of the things we're doing is kind of blurring some of like the flavor lines between classes. Like, for instance, one of the other themes we have right now is magic user, and that lets you get a familiar, you get a couple cantrips.
That's independent of being a wizard?
Exactly, yeah.
Man.
Well, hold on a second. Are we trying to assert these distinctions between classes?
So this is the
liar.
So this is the key, right? Every class, so for instance, it's the fighter is going to have his expertise dice. You can't get expertise dice.
I see. So there's a mechanical function,
exactly.
too, that's unique.
Exactly. Or, for instance, with magic user, with the wizard, you can't get spell slots. You can't get your... And this is something we haven't designed yet, but we're going to add. Each wizard has a different tradition.
That's some cultural stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Social stuff.
And I think a good place to stop.